Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Are you talking about an Xavier School for the Gifted?
No, they're a bunch. They're from Hogwarts, I think. Right?
Okay.
Yeah. Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hi, hello, how are you?
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, then jump back into other fun movie topics. This is episode 257, 257.
Another odd number.
It's probably Prime.
It seems like it comes up every couple of weeks here.
Is it Prime? It's gotta be Prime, 257.
The sound of me stalling.
Is it prime.com? Is that a site?
No.
I'm checking that out.
I was just dividing it by two.
Stop the podcast. Is it prime.com? I hope it's an Optimus Prime fan site. That's what I hope it is.
So far, is a prime number.
So far, nothing. What is it?
Yeah, that's what Google tells me.
Okay, nothing's coming up for Is It? So this is a hot website address that we need to tap into right away.
That we need to purchase? Okay,
yeah,
got it.
Purchasing that one, we're getting it. Anyway, what the hell are we talking about? 257 is the episode of this week, and this week's episode we are talking Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
What's that again?
Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, okay.
Yeah, as we like to say for short.
And joining us to talk Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, the latest film from director Tim Burton, we have joining us from Geeks of Doom, taking a break from Loop Day, it's Michael Lee.
Hello.
Michael!
How much time do I have left before I have to re-enter that loop?
Well, it depends on when
the bomb's going to drop on your house.
But Michael, thanks for joining us today. Glad to have you back on the show.
You're very welcome. Glad to be here.
Yeah, let's get to some show note stuff real quick. First thing... Abe, you're even on this bonus episode I'm about to talk about, which
first
is always great.
First things first, I'm the realest. That's an old song from 2012? That was Iggy Azalea. She's no longer famous.
We're saying old on that one?
She's old.
And that's an old song, too. Get out of here!
When's the last time she dropped an album? When's the last time she actually like freestyled on Sway in the Morning?
This means I have to care. Regardless, Abe, you were on this bonus episode I'm about to talk about. It is our first... of our 5 October bonus horror episodes.
Ooh, spooky!
Every week in October, we have a new bonus episode coming because it's October and because we like talking about horror movies, where I'm generally joined by friends of the show, Brandon Peters and Jimmy O and Jason Coleman and Abe when he can make time because he has a busy work schedule.
I do.
And so in the previous years, we talked about the decades of horror each week, and we did filmmaker spotlights for several notable directors in the horror genre. This year, we're doing horror genres. So each we're going to talk about a new horror genre. This first episode that's already available on iTunes and Audioboom is for slasher films, where Abe and I, along with our guests, we discussed what defines a slasher film, as well as having 3 or 4 picks of our own that we wanted to highlight for the genre.
We also had pretty good... We didn't really overlap that much, and when we did, it was for a good reason, but we also had good logic as to why we chose our particular list. So, for example, like my list was a little bit more of horror comedy, and that was great. It was a great discussion. I learned so much because I'm not a huge fan of horror, and I learned so much listening to Aaron, Brandon, and Jimmy.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I'd like to think that not only were we, providing the fun that we have, because we like to kid around on this show.
That's not true at all.
But we like to have fun. But we also, I think, there's a lot of good knowledge in there, just about obscure genres and things that go into them for people that really enjoy this field. So if you want to check that out, we'd be happy to happy for you to listen, because it's a lot of fun doing those episodes.
And it's Halloween season.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So that's up there. That's on iTunes now, as I said. Other things, speaking of the horror episodes, actually, Jimmy O, who's on that podcast and a friend of the show in general, he has been involved in producing a movie called The Harvesters. And this horror movie is going to have its world premiere in Los Angeles on the 18th of this month. So if you're in Los Angeles, you can go to the Regency Theater out in L.A. and attend that film screening for free. He's being thrown for free. There will be the cast and crew will be there. Jimmy will be there, of course, and it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to checking it out finally as well. So that's happening. I brought this also up last week, but if you are in the SoCal area and you're like, I want to work for a film festival, I will say the Newport Beach Film Festival, which I do cover yearly, is open for interns. They're hiring on interns. My lovely girlfriend, she is the director of interns there, and she'd be happy to have more and more interns apply. So if you're in that area,
your lovely girlfriend is Allison Janney.
did not say that whatsoever. My lovely girlfriend is Anna Bush, and she is looking for more interns to join the Newport Beach Film Festival.
Making sure, because, you know, Allison Janney was head of communications. Was she head of communications over at the White House?
She was the press secretary.
Press secretary? Okay, yes. Communications is Toby, my bad.
That's way off. She's speaking in front of people all the time. Yeah, Toby's handling it. Yeah, okay. Enough about that. Enough about Richard Schiff. Sorry, Ballers Richard Schiff.
Is he really in Ballers?
Yes, he is on Ballers.
I haven't seen a single episode.
That's very location-specific stuff. So when we get some New York guests on the show again, they can talk about all the stuff on the East Coast. But for now, that's what we got going on. So here we go. Let's move on now from show notes. Let's get to know everybody. We each week we ask each other a question or two, try to set the tone for the podcast, or better get to know everybody. All right. Abe, why don't you start this one off?
I do have a question for you guys. Do you guys have a nice little top coat that you guys like to wear?
Like a general jacket?
Yeah. Or I'd actually prefer top coat, because the costume design in this movie is pretty good. And there's one kid who dresses pretty well, and I was like, that's a nice top coat.
I mean, it's a Tim Burton film with Colleen Atwood doing the costume design. You could go a little farther than saying pretty good. It's regardless of the movie, the production's going to be great. No matter what.
Yeah, I mean, two of the kids. One of them is the invisible kid. He's got a nice coat all the time, and he's got a nice little, I guess, I don't know what you call it. It's a hat? I forget.
I'd call it a hat. He wears it on his head.
Exactly. You put it on your head. It's a hat, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I was like a pre-Kangle hat.
In regards to your, Sam Jackson is in this movie, so he probably sponsored the hat anyway. Regardless, to your question.
Yeah.
I'm in Southern California. It doesn't exactly get too like peacoat heavy here as far as needing to have a big layer on top. But I have a couple jackets I like to wear. Okay. Obviously Luke Cage coppered me because I wear a hoodie a lot. But I also, I rock a members only jacket that I like quite a bit.
Nice. A bomber jacket?
A members only jacket.
Members only bomber style jacket?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Not really.
So yeah, I wouldn't say I have a top coat, but I would just, you know, I have a couple jackets or blazers out there in my closet. So
Michael wearing those blazers with a smoking corn cob pipe.
Pretty much.
I do have a top coat. I do like wearing it, but I need to get a different top coat.
Very detailed. Okay.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What year would you want to be perpetually reliving?
1929.
The stock market crash?
Stock market crash.
Stock market crash.
So like right before, what is that, October?
Nope, during. October 3rd, 1929. Actually, I don't know. I just made up a date there. That was the first one that came to mind.
Okay.
That's how we play the game, right?
How about in your life?
Oh, in my life. Oh, Let's go with 2008.
The entire year?
October 31st. Halloween of 2008. Sure. I don't know what happened that day. Just like in that podcast, what was the podcast where the cereal, but I'm pretty sure that it was an okay day.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was Michael? Long-winded. Let's go with Michael, who will likely give a much better answer.
When was the last leap year?
It was this year.
Oh, okay, this year.
I'll live that year. I'll live that day because I don't even remember what happened, but I'll make it better.
All right.
I'll make the most of it.
I would go with, I would say, April 22nd, 2014. That's what I would go with.
2014. I'm going to guess that is when The Dark Knight Rises came out. And I'm just kidding. I was like, Aaron's a really big Batman fan.
You know what? Here's a funny thing. For fact, it's the one I met Anna. But the other thing,
that was my second guess.
Yeah. Cue the
other thing. It was Batman Day a couple weeks ago,
huh?
And Anna and I we went to Barnes and Noble because they have like free stuff. but they also like announced they have
free stuff at Barnes and Noble.
They had pre Batman Day comic and a thing that I'm about to get to.
So I was thinking about chai tea, but
well, they also had like all the Batman comics in like a special section and everything, so you can buy them if you don't already have them. I have them, so it's like whatever. But they had a trivia contest. And so at first it was just Anna and I sitting there like waiting because it's, you know, a random, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday for Batman, for this obscure thing called Batman Day that just was randomly established by DC. It has no bearing on when Batman actually first came into existence. But regardless, there's a trivia thing and Anna and I were sitting over there. Then eventually like a father and son came, and like a young son, father and young son came over. And so it was team Anna and I versus team those people in this trivia contest.
Wipe the floor with them.
Well, yes, but that's besides the point. But they asked the question, when did the Dark Knight Rises came out? And I completely pulled out the right answer. Like I knew it was like 2012 in July, and then it was like 20th, and that was exactly the right
See, so I wasn't that far off.
You have a 31, you know, chance. 31 chances.
But it was just funny. It was like I figured they're just searching for like the year or something. They're like, no, they want the exact date. Yeah, I know, and I nailed it. So there.
Who was running this quiz? Doc Brown?
Yes. And so yeah, we won the trivia contest, and I have an awesome exclusive Batman Day poster that sits right in front of me. Actually, so.
Did you shake hands with the kid afterward and say, "Hey, good job"?
We played friendly. Like I tried.
He was all up in his face.
When you're getting all the answers, it's hard.
Plus, the kid was like a giant jerk to you.
Well, no, the kid is like six, so it's like it's hard to be like, man, I'm gonna just destroy.
You know what? You know what he's thinking right now? He's like, I want to be like that guy when I grow up. Pointing to you, he's like, Batman knowledge up the wazoo.
Well, like, the dad got one, and the kid was, like, so happy, so it's like, all right, like, at least they're having a good time kind of thing. Just, like, random guy and his girlfriend are, like, dominating this family for Batman trivia for the sake of winning a free poster. But no, we all had fun. It was a good time.
That's good.
So, now that we know plenty about me and a little bit about Abe and Michael, that's how you play.
Talking about, you know that I love a top coat.
that's how you play.
No, everybody.
All right. Moving on, let's get down to quickies.
Yep.
Each week and out now, we have one movie we think to talk about through the week. That's all we're going to quickies.
Tim, that was an A- this week.
I ranked it up.
I'll give it an A.
Thank you. Thank you. Abe, have you seen any other movies this week?
I did. Elvis and Nixon is streaming on Netflix or on Amazon Prime, and it is goofy as shit. It's like, it's really. So there's a photograph of Elvis and Nixon, and this is basically a made up story behind that photo. And they execute it really well, actually. It's Michael Shannon is Elvis Presley, looks nothing like him. Richard Nixon is played by Kevin Spacey, looks somewhat like him. But they have some really goofy lines in this movie that just made me laugh. I mean, it's actually probably one of my favorite, what's the I Am Number 4 guy?
Alex Pettifer?
Yeah, this is probably Alex my favorite Pettifer. Alex Pettifer movie.
Well, he's good by default because he doesn't have to play the
because he doesn't do much.
He's just like he's just audience surrogate essentially.
Yeah, he's just like he's almost straight man because he's like Elvis. You know, this isn't actually going to happen. They're going to give you a badge. That's ridiculous. In any case, there's you know, it's kind of off kilter. Not a whole lot of people really liked it per se, but it actually has a few moments where I was laughing out loud and. For the most part, it's really not for everybody. I can definitely tell by the
76 of Rotten Tomatoes. Just
76, yeah. But I mean, if you look at everything else, like a lot of mixed reviews. I'm pretty sure people were like, "What am I actually watching here? This isn't funny. It's not topical. It's not even. It's kind of farcical." And if you take it as such, then I think you'd actually have a good time with it. And it also, it's on Amazon Prime streaming, so you're not really. I mean, you're paying $99 a year for it, but, you know.
I really liked it.
Very much so?
I liked it enough where, like, I'd watch it again. Like, I saw it, I think, during a week where probably some celebrity died and probably bad things happened in the news or whatnot. And I'm like, what will this movie be? Because it has Michael Shannon and Kevin Spacey as Elvis and Nixon. It's a backup, but yes, it's based off this famous photograph between them, and people look at that and are like, why did that happen? This is the story of why that happened.
Yeah, story in quotes.
Yeah. But I understand it's very light, but I had a great time watching it. It's very breezy, and that's why I liked it so much. While regardless of the looks of these people, I do think there's something to be said for how Michael Shannon channels the this stage of Elvis's career, like the kind of attitude he has, in the same way that Kevin Spacey kind of naturally does a Nixon thing. It doesn't seem like he's trying very hard to do Nixon routine.
minus like a few like voice flubbery. He's like, what the hell is going on here?
Well, it's more like, you know, Kevin Spacey's coming to his latest Saturday Night Live impression, while Michael Shannon's just like, whatever, let me do this thing now because I'm already amazing.
And I will say that even though it kind of goes for laughs, there's a part where Michael Shannon is basically having a monologue. It's really well done. You know, he's looking in the mirror, he's talking about some serious things, and I didn't expect it to go that way. But again, I love Michael Shannon as an actor. There's another scene where, just to give you a sense of the screwball comedy that it is, they have to check in their guns with the Secret Service. They're checking all their guns, and the Secret Service guy asks, what's in the package? He's like, I had this specially wrapped, I want the president to unwrap it. And then they unwrap it, and it's another gun. So, I laughed a lot during that. So, any case, Elvis and Nixon. Also, Luke Cage is fantastic.
good addition.
It's not a movie, it's Netflix.
Yeah.
Mike, how about you?
I saw Queen of Quatway, actually.
Oh, cool.
And it was... It's kind of stumbled in the first probably few minutes, because I guess it's just trying to find its own story and find its own voice. But once you get past that, it carries on through really, really well. The performances are great. I especially like the young girl, I'm trying to find her name right now. Medina Luongo. I'm going to butcher this name like I always do with the other names. But Medina Luongo, she was great as
Phoenicia?
Fiona. Yes. the lead actor. the person that's becoming a chess prodigy, basically. So for those that don't know, it's just Fiona grows up in the slums of Uganda, and she becomes one of the most well-known chess prodigies out there.
I'm getting used to it. I'm just thinking about it. I'm not even kidding.
I really enjoyed this movie too. I brought it up a couple weeks ago. It's one that
it's a feel good movie. It's like one of those really feel good movies, and it does a great job of showing the dichotomy of, you know, what's available to her, but what's also, you know, on the other side of that.
It's one where I wouldn't expect like a giant audience, just because this kind of movie wouldn't have that. But I really hope people get a chance to see it, because it's a solid Disney sports movie.
Yeah.
I saw a couple things this week. I'll highlight just a few of them. The first is Deepwater Horizon. This is the other major release of the week, the new Peter Berg film starring Mark Wahlberg, Kurt Russell, John Malkovich accent, and Gina Rodriguez, Kate Hudson, and The Maze Runner.
Yeah, The Maze Runner. I mean, hopefully Dylan's feeling a lot better. I mean, we know that he had that giant accident.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we do kind of like those movies, so yeah. And it's a shame that, you know, anyone gets injured, you know, working on anything, a movie or whatnot. But yeah, and the movie's been postponed to like 2018 now, so I really hope this thing ends well, I guess. But we'll see. Regardless, Deepwater Horizon, it's really solid. I tend to like Peter Berg films.
Good to hear.
I tend to like, at least from a technical level, I tend to like Peter Berg films. And this was a nice, you know, after Lone Survivor, which Abe and I were not big on. I can admire some of the action, but
some of the
from a technical standpoint, yes, we certainly admire it. Exactly. This movie is a nice kind of return to form, as far as giving us both it's weird to say character rich, because it's very workmanlike. You very much get it's more like day in the life type stuff, as opposed to like, you know, super depth characterization of these people. But, you know, the movie spends a good portion of time just giving you a lot of shop talk about how to work on an oil rig like this. And this movie obviously depicts the events from 2010 with the giant oil spill out in the Gulf of Mexico, and like what led up to that and everything. And it's just, as I was saying, it does a very good job of kind of giving you a understanding of these men, what they're doing, why, how they work, the various terminology involved. The press notes actually had a glossary of terms, which was kind of entertaining to me. And, you know, what leads up to this, you know, giant disaster. This explosion happens, oil's everywhere, fires everywhere. And there's a great level of intensity it was intense to watch. I mean, you're seeing all of this stuff go down, and regardless of the stuntmen and CG involved, it's very convincing to get me into the moments of like watching this kind of nail-biting suspense type action take place. It's my new favorite Kurt Russell Battles Fire movie. Backdraft's not a good movie, so that's
Kurt Russell's good in it.
He's good. Yeah, well, Kurt Russell's Kurt Russell.
And,
but no, this movie it's really solid. Like, and Wahlberg in particular, and Kurt Russell's great in it, and Malkovich is. He's very much villaining it up as the greedy money man who's doing stuff in this movie. But Wahlberg, you know, for all the like machismo he has in some movies and the kind of dumb earnestness he has in other movies, which I really like. I tend to like dumb earnestness.
Ted 2.
Yeah. Boogie Nights. I think he's doing some of his best work in this movie. Like, it's because he's much like a Sully. Like, none of the characters are, you know, playing heroes or supermen in this movie. Like, they're not going above and beyond the Call of Duty as far as what physical, you know, ability they have to solve things. They're just doing a job, and then, you know, it's an emergency situation, so they have to do things in a certain way. And Wahlberg does that, but he lets himself be vulnerable. And Wahlberg seems like the kind of guy where, like, he can make fun of you, but you can't make fun of him. You know, that kind of attitude.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And so it was...
Pain and gain attitude.
Yeah, so it was neat to see him both be a guy who's, you know, he's helping and doing what he can, but it's not easy for him. And, the, you know, spoilers for history, some people die and some people survive. And he's a character that survives. That's why we have this movie, because we get a first-hand account of it, essentially.
I guess you could call him a lone survivor.
No, because there's hundreds of
others. There's other people. Also, that was a bad joke during like a pretty serious movie.
But there's a sense of like he's doing what could be considered heroic acts to help save people. But also, you get this great scene of him reacting to all the stuff that happened, and it's not easy. It's not like... It's not like, wow, I did my job and I feel great now. He does not feel good about it. And I was really admiring how much Wahlberg put into this role. I was somewhat surprised by this. Like, I was expecting like a decent movie, but I was surprised by that how good it was in terms of both its intensity and how strong the cast was.
Glad to hear that. Yeah. Because it also catches me off guard, because of the last movie that we saw, like what you mentioned, 13 Hours, Peter Berg, Mark Wahlberg, or I'm sorry, Peter Berg, it's just like, you know, this... It's all right. Wait, was that Peter Berg?
No, that was Michael Bay.
That was Michael Bay.
That was Michael Bay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhat similar.
Yeah. My bad.
But this one, you know, doesn't have to contend with the politics of anything. It's just it's more of like an accident that happened. It references, obviously, there's a giant oil spill that happened, and that's horrible.
It doesn't skirt around that issue, right?
It skirts around it in a way where it doesn't really, it's not part of the movie. The movie's focused on the men that were on this rig and what happens there. And so it doesn't, while there's another version of this movie that probably could focus on more of the politics that came before and after this event, it really does, it just centers on the people involved. And why that doesn't bother me is because people did die in this thing. And that's something I didn't even realize too much of. I realized at the time, and, you know, in years since, I could probably acknowledge, yeah, there probably some people got hurt, but I didn't really know the severity of the situation involving human life. So, and I think that's because the news kind of overshadowed that with a lot of the, you know, the oil thing going on, which is, you know, obviously a giant problem as well. But I can credit the movie for putting a focus where it did, because it does matter to a point.
That's good to hear.
And it doesn't feel too exploitative, because obviously it's a movie that's based, it's, you know, it's a disaster movie that happens to be based off a real life thing. So, you know, you can look at it one way and think, why are we entertaining this? But it does a good job of respecting the situation.
Okay.
I'll briefly talk about the other things, because I saw a lot of stuff. But I saw this movie called The Whole Truth with Keanu Reeves, Renee Zellweger, Jim Belushi.
Haven't heard of it, but...
I saw a trailer for this. So.
I think it's coming out in like limited release and on VOD in a couple weeks. It's a procedure.
There's a lot.
It's a courtroom drama. It stars Keanu Reeves as a lawyer defending a kid who murdered his father and is refusing to speak. So it's making it very difficult for Reeves to do his job as a lawyer defending him. And it's like a really good Law and Order episode, essentially. It's not
good or bad.
Well, it's good to a point. Like I was entertained. I was engaged the whole way. I was engaged the whole way through. I was engaged the whole way through. Aaron Neworth, Twice the Blue. But like it is fine at what it's doing. I think Reeves is solid. He has a voiceover narration, which made me think he should do more neo noir, because he's pretty good at this that voiceover narration in this way. My major issue though is that I feel like the first, a person that watches, you know, plenty of movies, I feel like the movie tips its hand pretty early, and so I kind of knew what to expect. So that kind of took away some of the tension. So that was largely my main issue with it. But
Keanu Reeves was actually in a mental hospital, and he's also all the characters?
Yeah, that's exactly
That fucking identity movie.
Yeah, but no, it's fine. Like, what I like is that it gets right to the courtroom case. Like, it doesn't have it, and it just kind of fills in some details via flashback. So it doesn't really have too much of a lead up to the main event of the film. So that was fine. So that's called The Whole Truth. And the last thing I'll mention, older classic movie, The Battle of Algiers.
I thought you were going to start with The Battle of L.A., and I was like,
Battle of L.A.
Why would you mention that movie?
I revisited the Aaron Eckhart future classic, Battle of L.A.
Episode number one.
The Battle of Algiers, this is a classic film from 1957. It has a brand new 4K restoration, and so I was like, yes, I want to go see this on a big screen, and so I did, and the movie is still fantastic. It tackles the French presence in Algeria. The movie set in 1950s. It was made in 1966. But it's just it's a fantastic film that is still very relevant today as far as race relations and people occupying places where they maybe things are difficult. So there.
Cool.
If you haven't seen The Battle of Algiers, it's a highly influential film as far as how other filmmakers do their thing these days. So certainly one to check out. Okay, that's Unknown Quickies. Let's move on now. Let's get to our trailer talk. We're talking about when the news movie trailers, when it's coming out, what we think of it, and what have you. And this week, I feel like we might have talked about this tangentially before, Abe, because I don't think we ever actually did a full segment on it. But we're talking Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the upcoming Harry Potter spinoff, prequel, whatever you want to call it.
It's a shared universe movie.
Shared universe movie. All right, I like that. I'll go with that. It stars... what's his face? It stars Eddie Redmayne.
Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne.
Academy Award winner Eddie Redmayne as Newt Scamander, competing for Best Name of the Year. And he's a magician who arrives in America in the 1920s. He has a briefcase full of all kinds of fantastic beasts, and they get loose. And the whole film is about them trying to get these fantastic beasts back. A lot of other stars here: Catherine Waterston, Dan Fogler, Colin Farrell, Ezra Miller, and a bunch of other people. Mike, what did you think of the trailer for this film?
I thought this is going to be the one movie that will make me actually like this Harry Potter franchise.
So you're not a Harry Potter fan?
I'm not a big Harry Potter fan. I just don't know why. It just never gravitated toward me. But this whole period piece looking thing, world that they've created since it takes place in 1920... it looks so much more interesting than any one of the other Harry Potter films had to offer me. So
interesting.
I
assume you haven't read the books then, if you're not a big...
No, I haven't read the books.
Yeah, so. I haven't either. And I'll go next, I guess. I have not read the Harry Potter books. And I would say, yeah, the film series, I respect that film series. And I certainly like some of those entries more than others. I don't dislike any of them. But I'm not a Potterhead or whatever they call
them. Yeah, I'm not a huge...
Is that what they call them?
I hope so. Hashtag Potterheads.
I was gonna say, you GM. Also said magician. It's like, oh man, he's gonna get some of the people, man.
I'm just a muggle in a room full of magicians when it comes to Harry Potter. But my relationship with the Harry Potter franchise, it's like it's there, and I, you know, the films are what they are. There's some really good ones and some okay ones, but this movie, I can go either way on it, I feel, but I am intrigued in the same way that you are, Mike, that the movie, it has this 1920s period setting that gets me, that, you know, it's that already tells me it's not going to be the same as a Harry Potter movie. It's set in America. That's another little big distinction right there. And this looks like Eddie Redmayne's funniest performance since Jupiter Ascending. So that seems like a good positive. Between the basic setting, the concept I think is pretty fun, even if it sounds like it could turn into a video game pretty quickly. I entertain this because it does have David Yates, who directed some of the better Harry Potter films. I would argue I like the Deathly Hallows Part One the most in that series. So, bringing back a lot of these elements, bringing in this cast together. You know, I'm a big Colin Farrell fan, so right there that helps. But I am looking forward to this film. I would say each subsequent trailer hasn't necessarily made me like more inclined to see the movie. I'm just more or less like, all right, yeah, it's still coming. Here we go. But I'm excited to check this one out.
It's also J.K. Rowling's like first major screenwriting debut. So thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah, so that should be an interesting aspect of it as well. Abe?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Harry Potter books and the movie franchise. I've been, what's the right adjective?
Lukewarm?
No, because I like them, but it's
satisfied?
Kind of mixed bag. So some of them are better than others, like you had mentioned. Even though I enjoy watching them, some of them skirt over some of the topics that I think really make Harry Potter Harry Potter. In any case, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I'm excited for it. I'm on the same page as you both, and I do enjoy the setting in terms of like the 1920s New York, and also a big fan of Colin Farrell. So overall, I'm excited to see where it goes. I haven't really watched the last trailer. People are kind of pretty excited about that most recent trailer, but I've seen enough to make me want to not learn anymore. So that's good.
I just want to note that the Teen Choice Awards nominated this film for Choice Anticipated Movie. I just want to throw that one out there. So it's already got some accolades, guys.
Is that the one where they give you a surfboard, or is that the Nickelodeon?
That is the Teen Choice Awards.
Yeah, you get the surfboard.
You get the surfboard,
which I'm sure many actors proudly display in their trophy cases, along with all the Emmys, Grammys, Oscars, and what have you.
I mean, if you're only winning Golden Globes, it's one of the best trophies out there, right?
Who cares about an EGOT? Let's go get a surfboard. You know?
Exactly, and that Nickelodeon blimp.
Let's just replace the Tonys with the Teen Choice Awards, I think, in the EGOT. I think that's what most actors do.
I mean, it feels like those actors are a little bit more... they have better speeches.
I just want to read some of the winners of the Teen Choice. We're way off topic already. Deadpool for Choice Action. All right.
It's not a bad pick.
Dylan O'Brien for Scorch Trials, Choice Movie Actor Action.
Okay, no.
Shailene Woodley, Divergent Allegiant, Choice Movie Actress Action. Action. To be fair, the competition, not that high.
I was going to say, like, yeah, how many other teenage movies are there? And who is the voting panel on here? This has got to be like a group of like 10-year-olds, right?
A very diverse group of 10-year-olds.
Exactly.
Choice movie sci-fi, Captain America.
Yes, okay.
Choice movie actor sci-fi, Chris Evans. Okay. Actress, Jennifer Lawrence. Choice movie drama, I'm going to read the nominations on this one. All Straight right. Outta Compton, Point Break. The Martian, Creed, 10 Cloverfield Lane, The Winner, Miracles from Heaven.
What?
Wait, wait,
it
what?
Wasn't even nominated.
It was. No, that was. There were 6 nominees.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. Well, I mean, to be fair, none of those kids can go see the other ones.
It beat Point Break. So.
Point Break is the best.
Drama. Nominated in drama. There was two. There, the action was two.
Wait a minute. Point Break was drama nominated?
Drama. Yeah, it was a drama.
For the Teen Choice Awards.
Teen Choice Awards, yeah.
And it was also action nominated?
No, it did. There's no. Oh, okay, it wasn't.
All right.
It was too much.
I think an action.
I'm gonna stop reading
TV awards.
Stop reading these now.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, let me see. I'm just going through the last of these. Actually, okay. Dylan O'Brien did win Choice Actor Anticipated for Deepwater Horizon. So there you go.
Wow.
Okay.
Congratulations, Dylan.
Let's never speak of this again. Let's move on. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, as we were all talking about very lively, opens November 18th in, I assume, 3D and IMAX as well.
And probably IMAX, yeah.
So there you go. Let's get to our main review for Tim Burton's Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
There's a new world coming.
Wait, what's happening?
This one's coming to a...
Come meet the others.
There's a brand new morning.
Jake, right on time.
Miss Peregrine, delighted to meet you.
He's invisible.
Of course. We're what's known in common parlance as peculiar. It's a recessive gene carried down through families.
That should have been some of the trailer for Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. The what we've established is the second longest title of a Tim Burton's film career, following Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Tim Burton is back, and he has been literally given an island of misfit toys to play with. The visionary director has made a film based on a novel by Ransom Riggs, adapted by Jane Goldman, concerning the teenager who finds a group of children known as Peculiars off an island off the coast of Wales. On an island off the coast of Wales, they are known as this because they all possess a variety of powers, ranging from invisibility to having a mouth in the back of one's head. As regular. These children live in a home in the home of Miss Peregrine, played by Ava Green, a peculiar with the power to create time loops, an anomaly in time that allows all to live on the same day over and over again in an effort to protect themselves from a certain doom. There's a lot of other details to go through involving this, but let's get to just talking about the film. Michael, how have you been with Tim Burton recently, and what'd you think of this movie?
Well, how I've been with Tim Burton recently, I'm just rather bored with his latest efforts. I can't remember the last film I liked from him. I think it was Frankenweenie, but pretty much everything after that has just been boring. Well, I had no interest in seeing this film, and when I did see it, when I caught a screening of it, it's like, oh, I'll see if I can give it a chance. There was this whole mix of, you know, X-Men and taking place like in time loops and whatnot, like you were mentioning. So I was like, okay, you know, I'll try to give this a chance, but it does not lend well, I guess, to me, not to people like me, but when to my kind of taste, because it just took forever to establish itself as like what kind of movie it wants to be. And for sitting through that kind of thing for 2.5 hours or so, it's just not really worth it.
Was it really 2.5 hours?
It's a little over 2 hours.
Wow. No, I mean, just like,
so I'm tacking on 30 more minutes, basically.
No. I know what you mean. I'm not trying to defend it. I was just like, wow, if it was 2.5 hours, then yeah, that kind of enhances my opinion a little bit.
Olivia, what about you?
How feels about Tim Burton? I feel like Tim Burton's kind of been off and on. I generally enjoyed his earlier work, and then around the time of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, I was kind of like, it was all right, because Big Fish, I enjoyed a lot of aspects of it, but I didn't enjoy some aspects of it. And then, yeah, you move into other things where
Big Eyes was quite good.
No. Well, I'm going to get to that, which is to say that of his more recent work, it's like, I enjoyed Big Eyes. But I'll get into that a little bit more in a second here. So Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, I wasn't a huge fan of it. And, you know, I find it very difficult for a director like Tim Burton to go from Big Eyes, Frankenweenie, even Dark Shadows, and you get something that feels very uninspired, and it feels very not Tim Burton-like, meaning the colors aren't saturated, or there's nothing very, very, like, very eye-pleasing, or there's not a lot of eye candy on the screen in terms of the visual aspect of it, not in terms of the actors or the actresses. Maybe you can argue that when he goes into the time loop, Asa Butterfield goes into the time loop, and he sees the house for really what it was, and yeah, there's some things. But no, you take a look at something like Big Eyes, and everything's saturated. Like, the whole entire town of California that she goes in, all the colors of the cars, their lipstick, et cetera, et cetera. And that kind of lends itself to be a little bit more of a director's approach to how things are made. In any case, there's nothing really... I talked about the Maleficent some last week, and I said that there was nothing remarkable about it, but the actors kind of kept me in the movie. And in this case, for Miss Peregrine's, there's nothing remarkable about the movie either, and the actors really didn't take me anywhere. And I feel bad because Chris O'Dowd, Asa Butterfield, Eva Green, all great actors and actresses, and it feels like they're wasted in this movie because... Mm-hmm. And you have to think that, well, the director kind of maybe has a play in that, but also the writing has a play in that a lot. And the writing is very, it's not helter-skelter, but it jumps a lot around a lot. You know, they're quickly from Florida to Wales to this other place, and there's not a whole lot of explanation, there's not a whole lot of exposition. So some of the writing kind of fails on that part, and which is kind of a shame because it comes off of a written work. So I would think that there's logic gaps that you can fill in with the writing from the author. With that being said, though, it just really feels uninspired. And like what Michael had mentioned, I thought about other movies similar to this as well. I wasn't huge on it, even though I enjoyed some of the performances from the child actors, the logic gaps and the length of time, but also just everyone just feels like they're kind of droning through this, so it's kind of a bummer.
I can say that it's lower tier, not even lower tier. I would say it's middle tier Burton for me. I can admit to that as far as my appreciation for the film. But I would completely disagree about it not being Burton-y. This is the most Tim Burton-y film I've seen in quite some time, as far as what things that I generally see in Tim Burton films. I mean, as I said, he has an entire island of stuff that you find in Tim Burton movies to play with here, and I can easily see why he was attracted to this property. Like, there's all these peculiar children have things that are inherently Tim Burton. I mean, his movies are generally about outcasts and loners that are isolated from other people and have their own random quirks about them, and this is an entire cast filled with those kind of characters. Mm-hmm. I can, mm-hmm. With Big Eyes, I like Big Eyes, but the only thing that seemed Tim Burton-y to me was the fact that it was titled Big Eyes, because he constantly has people with big eyes in his movies. This one, I can understand, there's a lot of exposition in this kind of film, because it's a YA adaptation. That's what these films are. You have to establish an entire world, and it is a little slow going at first, but I really enjoyed getting into this world. I liked the stuff that I was seeing. I liked exploring the home of Miss Peregrine and these different children and whatnot. And my major issues early on were just that Asa Butterfield and Chris O'Dowd are straddled with American accents, which is really taking away from what I think they're capable of.
Yeah.
Because they just seem very, not uncomfortable, but just kind of like they have to play to this, so it takes away from their chance to be more interesting from a kind of improvisational acting performance level. Like Chris O'Dowd, we both know, can be very funny, but he's just playing like, you know, concerned father, and it
with bad American accent. Yeah.
So it's like, okay, I can't, like, why?
He's also seemed pretty dramatic. I mean, if you've seen
For sure,
the girls.
He's a capable actor, but it's like, why get him if he's just gonna have to play this kind of character? It just doesn't add up to me. Regardless, I like being in this world. I like the time loop logic. I like all the production. I mean, it's. Tim Burton's never been a master storyteller. Like, that's not a concern of mine as far as his ability to really show a story. There's certainly films that have been better because of better scripts or what have you. And this is from James Goldman, who adapted Stardust and Kick-Ass and a lot of Matthew Vaughn films, essentially. I do think there's a lot of cleverness in the story being told. There's a lot of jumps as far as here's enough information to get you to understand the logic of a time loop or stuff like that, but without too much connective tissue, just because the movie's already long. But I wasn't too disturbed by what I wasn't being told necessarily, just because I was engaged by the movie. I liked the as I said, the world building stuff. I think only towards the third act, when it gets very action heavy, it just kind of drops everything off in favor of big battles. And while I like a good Ray Harryhausen inspired fight as much as the next person, I kind of wanted, you know, more of what's going on in this world. But I like this movie. I felt going out of it, there's like, I'm probably going to be one of the few that really appreciates what he's trying to do.
Hey, man, I appreciate it too. The technical aspects of it.
The visuals were pretty fantastic, actually. Like you said, the Harryhausen and the little stop motion nod and everything like that. That was pretty appealing to me. It was just narratively, it was just like, oh my gosh.
And I can understand that, but I think it's trapped in what's generally not a problem, but, you know, generally a pattern with YA films, where they all have to follow a certain logic as far as like, get a new world, get this guy that's probably like the chosen one, or at least one that was always born to be a part of these people, have a random romance, evil villain, and, you know, it goes through all those motions. But I like that it does wrap itself up. Like, it doesn't leave off on any kind of cliffhanger or an expectation that I need to see more of these movies. I was happy that it just kind of, it tells a very self-contained story. And I like the loop stuff. I thought that was a new clever thing, like, as far as what it's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly enjoyed the loop aspect of it too, because I think that's when the movie shifts its tone and kind of starts picking up a lot. But I just didn't like the drabness of the island. There's nothing really that they're doing on there.
Just very Tim Burton-y, by the way. Drabness.
I didn't think that there was Tim Burton-y. I mean, what do you have? You just have like dark clouds, and, you know, these characters aren't really that interesting on the island. I'm not talking about the time loop guys. I'm talking about just the townsfolk.
Oh,
where
yeah,
they
yeah.
are. The boat ride, well, all that
not,
stuff.
That's not the movie. That's like getting you places. That's not,
I know,
not,
but
like,
that's part of
the
movie. I mean, that's like the first like 20 minutes of the movie.
But why would I want? But that's the point.
Talks
though.
With Alice and Janney and all this other jazz.
Well, this is the point. This is the point, though. I'm not supposed to be super entertained by these people because they're the boring ones. I want to be with the peculiars. That's where Asa Butterfield belongs. Like, that's why he's trying to get away from the boring drab characters and get into.
I get that. I see
much
that.
Better life.
And then he gets into the world, and yeah, it's pretty neat because there's Slender Man all over the place. And, you know, this is really built. Like, I think there have been two movies now where Slender Man has been in it, this one and The Conjuring 2. So people.
Did you see Blair Witch?
I didn't know. Is there a Slender Man character in that? Okay. Okay. I'm not going to. I'll probably have to catch it on VOD or something like that. But I really don't think that there was that much of world building in the time loop part. I enjoyed the aspect of them going through the time loop and why they have to do it, but I don't think that there's really anything there. Feel free to expand on that.
Did you not see that? I mean, it literally establishes it a whole world as far as there's... these characters are, what time frame they're stuck, why they're stuck in this time frame. The fact
I understand,
that, the idea that they're stuck in this place.
It would have been more interesting for them.
Scheduled and everything like that.
Why there are villains after them, exactly what they're trying to do, what they consist of. I mean, there's so much there. There's too much. I mean, that's why the movie's this long to begin with.
That's probably true, but I certainly... And I know that they have to work off of a different property, but they brought up some interesting questions, which I would have hoped that they had gone into, which is, man, we have to do the same thing every day. Like, I already know what's going to happen, and yet I have to relive this time loop all the time. Because not even any of the main characters, like some of those younger kids, they're just like, well, no, I guess it's time for me to go and grow this giant carrot now. And they eat the same thing, they wear the same clothes. It's almost like they're dead, which would have been an interesting aspect. Not if they were, but it kind of plays up that aspect of, well, if you're in this time loop and you have to do the same thing all the time, what else can you find new about it? I mean, you're going to go on the same walk every day, and then all of a sudden, like, one of the peculiar children, he's not around anymore. I mean, we have to go and live with that guilt and that weight for the entire duration of our time loop.
There's
the kid when he walks in they have to tell him how their lives are being lived in this time loop.
That's why they enjoy having visitors, and that's why Abe, played by
a very lively Terrence Stamp. Yeah,
very lively. Yeah, I mean, when's the last time you saw him doing all that stuff?
I mean, he was jumping around. This movie was like, all right, I like this Terrence Stamp.
But that's why they enjoy having visitors. But when they don't have visitors, I would just think that their lives are not very fun because they've been living this for like 60 years. So.
Don't seem too sad about it.
That's true, but they seem very bored. Not the actors, but I mean, we're really going into how these characters would feel, because I actually really enjoyed one aspect of. What was the main? Who's the girl that's lighter than air? What's her?
Emma.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, Emma.
Emma.
So Emma brings up this really good point of, hey, you know, we could get out of the time loop and I could meet you in 2016, but I'd be dead. And I was like, that's kind of neat. Not that she'd be dead, but
why I like
they
the
are thinking
aspects.
About how this time loop would work and why they have to live in it. Which I enjoyed that aspect, but everything else kind of just felt very. Not even matter of fact. It just felt as though they had to go do this whole entire releasing. They had to build up to something, and it had to be Sam Jackson taking on the form of three people and talking about Florida, which I had a good chuckle at. But I just didn't feel as though it really came together all that neatly.
Well, the movie does spend a lot of time explaining itself, like throughout the whole movie. Is there always these new rules? And it's just having to explain itself for the duration of the movie. Two hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we said. And that's what I found so bothersome, is just like, why do we always have to explain all these new rules all of a sudden? Just like, I guess it was a matter of convenience, I guess. That's all.
And I can understand that. It doesn't get past me that the narrative is not the strongest of stories being told. And as I said, it is based on this YA novel, which has, you know, this kind of trap of having to go through certain emotions or whatnot. And just, I'd imagine just a general studio desire to make things explainable to a point, but not without sacrificing too much screen time, that kind of thing. So yes, it presents some kind of, some holes or whatnot, but I was able to. I looked over those because I really enjoyed the style of this movie because it is Tim Burton, and it feels very Burton to me. It felt very Tim Burton-y, and it was much darker than I expected as well. Like this is like I was thinking, okay, it's a YA novel, so it won't do too much. But there's, you know, there's characters like slurping down eyeballs and people shoving hearts into stuff and making them come alive, and it's like,
see, that part was cool.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that feels like Tim Burton.
Like,
it's exactly
that part,
it's Tim Burton
more like
stuff.
Tim Burton. Because that's the stuff that you know, Frankenweenie is based off of let me go and stuff hearts into dead animals because I love this animal so much. I mean, that stuff was the stuff that I was kind of hoping there would be more of, but I was kind of, it felt very, neutered in some respects too.
This movie's way darker than I would like. I'd be surprised for a kid audience to see this movie. I mean, there's characters that Terrence Stamp loses his eyeballs in the first 10 minutes of this movie. It's like
I don't disagree with you there.
Credits are really morose. Like it's ominous. There's a lot of mood in this movie that I was not necessarily expecting based off the pop song and the trailer and all that. That was just be a lot of like kid floating around with that girl that's lighter than air.
I'm glad that it was more than that, which is there's actually a darker story to be had.
Yeah.
But I also agree with you that, yeah, when you have the backstory of why Sam Jackson has white eyes and then they actually show you people eating eyeballs, sure, yeah. I was like, wow, this doesn't feel like it'd be great for kids. But at the same time, I wish that there was more of this. That's the stuff that I'm wanting to see from Tim Burton. You know, this very outworldly, outlandish aspect of people eating eyeballs, people attacking homes, and having knife fights with chicken and bears and whatever else that this kid.
Yeah, that was pretty gruesome.
That's
right
the kind
too.
Of stuff that I would expect, but it feels those feel like certain segments. And I mean, even at one point, I mean, I was just thinking to myself, I couldn't help myself from laughing, but there's this really nice part toward the end where Asa Butterfield is having this conversation with Emma. And I just couldn't help but look at the two ghouls in the background. Like, one of them is, like, trying to choke this woman. It's a painting on the side of a wall of a funhouse. And the other one is, like, trying to drag this woman away. And I was just like, oh, man.
Because that should be fun. Like, it's not beyond Tim Burton to know what his framing's doing.
Exactly.
He knows what's funny.
Which was like, I love Tim Burton for that. You know, that he would keep that into the frame and then go back to it every so often. I was like, that feels like something that Tim Burton would do.
I imagine even he's kind of like, not necessarily fed up, but not the most enamored with the Asa Butterfield character in like a required romance. I think it's more like he wants to get to this other stuff.
I think he kind of threw that one out the window. There's only like a couple scenes of that.
Well, it's the kind of thing like he needed like this audience surrogate type thing, and you have Asa Butterfield as, you know, this guy who lives in the real world, but he's actually peculiar kind of thing. He comes in. It's like watching like the first Hellboy. It's like, why am I focusing on some random white dude that comes in to like monitor Hellboy? Let me just focus on Hellboy. And that's why Hellboy 2 is better. Cause it's like, let's get rid of that guy. Let's get whatever.
Thanks a lot, Dark Knight.
Clearly I like the movie more than you. Like,
you do. And I feel as though I'm not arguing that it's terrible. I'm just saying that it doesn't really, like, even your arguments, when you're presenting them, while valid, and again, I'm not arguing with you.
It just, all you want. I don't care.
No. Sure.
I thought that was the point of this.
Sure, let's duke it out.
Let me start sniffling. Hold on. Go.
Are you putting your hands out, both of your hands out?
No, I'm not even doing it yet.
My
microphone's messed up.
Oh, okay. All right. I was just listening to Wait, Don't Tell Me when I was waking up. That was a good pull there.
Wait, don't tell me.
Yeah, on NPR.
Yeah.
In any case, I felt as though there wasn't enough of Tim Burton's strangeness, his goofiness in the movie. It wasn't peculiar enough. And even the characters, too clean. I mean, I wish that they had really gone into a little bit more of the time loops, I don't even know how much they could have gotten into the other schools. I don't really care, but I kind of wish that they explored a little bit more of why the time loop wasn't as perfect as she could have made it, even though we see the aspect of it. But I mean, even when that kid does put a heart into, the kid upstairs, I was like, that's cool. That's a Tim Burton move. I don't know. I just didn't feel as though it was previous Burton films have been much more creative, even when he's not writing it. So, kind of a bummer.
And aside from Big Eyes, I think compared to Frankenweenie, Dark Shadows, and Alice in Wonderland, I'm right at home with seeing a good contemporary. Even there's a lot of the Corpse Bride, Planet of the Apes. Like, it's been a while since I've been.
It has been a while.
And I'm not like completely enamored by the movie, but it's just like I was going in with like mild expectation. I came out being somewhat surprised by the amount of darkness that I do think is in this movie as far as death and cause of death. But I liked it. I liked what it was as far on this kind of YA template scale. It's a lot better than a lot of the other YA adaptations that come out and go nowhere ever.
I mean, like, when you think about like YA adaptations this one reminded me of like A Series of Unfortunate Events.
Yeah.
With Jim Carrey. And while that movie wasn't very good per se. I felt as though that one added a lot more atmosphere than this movie. You know, their house on the rocks, which is like 17 stories, and then the darkness of the movie in terms of the look of it. I felt as though that one added a little bit more pathos too. So I'm not trying to say one is better than the other. I'm giving you an example of
Brad Soderbergh's not going to come on this podcast and be like, the director of Casper really hates you for dissing on his movie.
By the way, he's here. He's my roommate.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And why don't you come on board?
No. Sorry, Brad.
He accepts your apology. He's getting cereal right now.
I don't know if you remember Cirque de Freak, the vampire's assistant.
Mm-mm.
That's one of John C. Reilly is like the mentor figure in that one. It's like a bunch of circus freaks, vampires and stuff. I liked that one. That was like one of the ones I was like, oh, that was not bad. This for me, this would be like a good double feature with that movie. That's where I'm at with it. As far as the A's go.
Okay.
All right, go watch Aragon. Go have fun with that.
I never watched it. Yeah. I'm going to go watch Percy Jackson instead. Because it's on TNT.
It's fine. Mainly because it's better. I liked it out of spite for Clash of the Titans. So, Percy Jackson. All right. So where, with that all said, where should people go and see Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children?
It's a rental. I mean, it's a Blu-ray rental.
Mike,
I agree. It's a rental. It's worth a rental. You know, or if it goes streaming, you can watch it on streaming too.
Yeah, I'd say dollar theater at most is like when you should go catch this movie. But yeah, you can wait for a Blu-ray on this one.
Don't avoid it. Yeah, go see it. I mean, it's not that bad.
If you're a Tim Burton completist, and I am, then
I just want to say, by the way, we didn't talk about Terrence Stamp a lot, but his
talking
name
about
is
any
Abe.
Of the actors at all a lot. But
yeah, his name is Abe. His character's name is Abe, and I'm
yeah,
just
I thought like, that would win you over.
Why is everyone calling me out in this movie here?
I was banking on you on that.
Why would that's gonna win me over? Because not a lot of people are named Abraham in movies.
So like Stamp's fine. Samuel L. Jackson, he's having fun as a villain, which he tends
he's having fun. I mean, Samuel Jackson works all the time too, so I appreciate him, you know, mailing it in.
Ava Green is basically Charles Xavier, but with a pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rupert Everett made a cameo in this movie.
Yeah, like when was the last time you saw Rupert Everett?
I saw his name come up in the credits, and I was like, Rupert Everett? Like the guy who was at My Best Friend's Wedding? I was like, yeah, what's that guy?
He's around.
I didn't recognize him at all.
Judi Dench is in it.
Judi Dench is, yeah, she's in it for...
She's in it for like two minutes, yep. She's great in it for 2 minutes. I thought that she added a little spark.
But I thought the kids were fun. I can't...
No, I don't disagree with you there.
But they were like vignettes to me. That's the thing. They're like, oh, here's this kid with his powers, and that's it. And we won't show it until the climactic scene.
But
so.
I thought it used them organically.
Yeah,
in a world where an X-Men movie can mess up how X-Men use their X-Men powers, I was happy this movie actually capitalized off what they're able to do.
I also appreciated that they didn't make any of the kids like... helpless, just to some degree.
Oh yeah, they all have it.
They all have parts,
yeah. And then they all fight, and they all, you know, like the girl who can lift the weight of 10 people. It's like she's kicking chairs around to close up and barricade the doors. So I'm glad that nobody was like, oh well, whimpering. And by the way, I mean, if those twins had that power, why didn't those twins just walk around and kill everybody?
Well, you got to use it at an ideal time. That's a timed attack that comes in when necessary.
That's like when your bar moves up in Street Fighter, right? You got to build up that bar.
Yeah, that's an earned power move.
Gotcha.
same with girl with mouth in the back of her head.
That was definitely more timed. Yeah.
All right. So, well, that's it. Let's move on now. That was our review for Tim Burton's Ransom Riggs, Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. all right, so let's do our sponsor real quick. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible?
Why?
Glad you asked. Yeah. Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks and other similar programs for your MP3 devices. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners an audiobook download, a free one of your choice, and a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast, choose a book to download for free. Maybe this one's on there. I don't know. I didn't check before because I'm not that responsible when it comes to the sponsors, apparently. But you can start listening. It's just that easy. But seriously, there's so many books on there. You can go to audibletrial.com/podcast, download a book, keep it. If you don't like the service, you can get rid of it, but you get to keep that book that you download for free. So be a winner.
And read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. All right, moving on now. Let's get to our feedback.
Feedback.
This is where we go over the various questions and answers on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where we asked a number of questions and you listeners gave us answers, and you also asked us questions, which we'll try to make up on the spot.
We never make up answers on the spot. That's impossible. By the way, Justin Weatherby just added like 7 new comments.
And I added them all to the feedback.
Awesome. Okay.
A shout out to Justin, apparently.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. we'll have to start putting timestamps on our things here. In any case, our first question to everybody, what is your favorite Tim Burton movie, best and worst? Manish writes, my favorite is Big Fish. I think Dark Shadows is the worst. Lots of wasted potential. Philip has Sleepy Hollow. I don't know if that's his best and our favorite. And lastly, Jason has, favorite is the toss-up between Beetlejuice and 1989 Batman. My favorite animated film is The Corpse Bride. And my worst, I would without a doubt say Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So there you go.
I've said many times that Ed Wood is what I think is the best Tim Burton film, and Sleepy Hollow is my favorite Tim Burton film. And Alice is easily his worst for me.
Okay, I was like, and the worst one?
Yeah, Alice.
Alice, yeah. Definitely Alice.
Yeah. Michael, any best worst? Well, we know your worst. Any best?
Best? I would have to say Beetlejuice.
Okay.
I mean, that's...
Don't say too much.
Beetlejuice.
Hey. I put a cartoon zipper on your face just then.
Yeah. I was imagining that scene exactly. We're on the same page.
Our next question, favorite Samuel L. Jackson hero or villain roles? Manish writes, hero probably has to be Mace Windu. As a kid, I really wanted a purple lightsaber like his. Villain, Ordell Roby from Jackie Brown, which Manish wins for me this week because that's a great pick. Greg has a hero, Zeus from Die Hard with a Vengeance. Villain, tie between Mr. Glass. They called him Mr. Glass from Unbreakable and Valentine from Kingsman, The Secret Service.
Great answer there.
Philip writes Nick Fury and Mr. Glass. Jason writes hero Jules from Pulp Fiction and Frozone from The Incredibles. Villain Valentine from Kingsman or Steven from Django Unchained. Also a great pick.
Yeah. Do you guys know how I knew that Sam Jackson was the villain in Unbreakable?
How?
Because of the kids! They called me Mr. Glass! Got him! All right, next. That was a good setup. Thanks, Abe. All right. Next question we asked everybody here. What is your favorite film about characters with special powers? Greg has The Dead Zone.
The ice! It's gonna break!
Philip has Half-Blood Prince. Justin writes Superman the movie, and lastly, Rob writes Swiss Army Man.
Movies about characters with special powers. That's a fun.
Yeah, that's a lot of farting, and he can shoot beans in his mouth or something like that.
Water.
Pebbles. Yeah. Next question we ask everybody: what is your favorite location setting from a Tim Burton movie? Joe Jans has the town in Edward Scissorhands, which is a good setting. Philip has Sleepy Hollow, and Jason has the Batcave or the town in Sleepy Hollow. And lastly, Justin has Edward Scissorhands. Does Nightmare count?
Sure. Nightmare.
He didn't direct it, but...
I'll give it to him.
Yeah.
I like Gotham. It's neat seeing Gotham. So I'll probably go Gotham.
Tim Burton's Gotham?
Yes, Tim Burton. Well, yes, we're talking about Tim Burton. Yeah, Tim Burton's Gotham.
Like the TV show Gotham? Because I haven't seen an episode.
Tim Burton's Gotham City is pretty unique. Maybe one of those places Ewan McGregor and his bad American accent visit in Big Fish. Maybe one of those is good. one of my least favorite shots in movies is when you have characters holding each other's hands and spinning around in circles. I you could think of like Titanic when they're all dancing and they're
Camera angle? Is the camera angle between them?
The camera's facing the person that they're holding your hands with.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
And it tends to like go back and forth between the two people. I tend to hate that camera angle.
Why did you bring that up?
Because in Big Fish, one of my favorite moments is Ewan McGregor dancing with someone, and Steve Buscemi is there, and he just kind of runs in the background while they're spinning, and it's maybe the funniest moment in that movie.
Steve Buscemi is there?
In Big Fish, yeah.
I've never caught this.
What do you mean, caught this? He's one of the main stars of the movie.
No, but I mean, I haven't seen it in a while, but...
There's a scene where Ewan McGregor's, like, dancing with someone and does that stupid camera angle, but, like, it just has, like, Steve Buscemi's, like, he's, like, running on the side and, like, looking over, he's like, hey! Like, he just looks into the frame as it happens, and it's like that... It's like it's playing with how stupid that camera angle is to me.
Yeah.
Next question we have. Favorite John Malkovich role?
John Malkovich.
In honor of Deepwater Horizon.
Oh, okay.
April writes, Con Air. This is the right answer, right? Nippon writes, and I tend to the rabbit. I get to tend the rabbits. Of Mice and Men.
Of Mice and Men, yeah.
Philip writes, F.W. Murnau in Shadow of a Vampire. That's a good pick.
Mm.
Justin writes, Con Air, Rounders, and Dangerous Liaisons.
Mm.
That's a, yeah, that's a...
Nobody chose Red.
Rounders is a Red.
No,
Rounders is another example of, hey, John Malkovich is doing an accent. That's great for him.
Yeah. The only problem with Rounders was they gave away that tell too easily. Matt Damon, I mean...
There's many problems. I mean, Rounders is fun and all. There's many problems with Rounders as far
yeah, there
as
is.
Card games they're playing and how convenient it is for them to get certain hands at certain times.
I mean, that's true. And, you know, Ben and Matt, they do know how to count those cards pretty well. But that stupid Oreo thing was just pretty stupid.
Well, he's John Malkovich. He makes it work.
John Malkovich.
I really like being John Malkovich. That's just a fantastic
movie. Yeah, that's a good movie.
Strange. I love exasperated, angry John Malkovich, generally because it's used for comedic effect.
Example?
Like,
so
Burn After Reading is hilarious for that reason, of him just... just like, give me the files back. You do not know who you are dealing with. Like, it just, he has a speech pattern that's hilarious.
Yeah. That's classically trained speech pattern.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Michael, do you have a favorite John Malkovich role?
I can't think of any right now, but
it's an obscure
choice, actually. But I, like you said about Burn After Reading, his just the way he talks. What else?
He says memoir a lot in Burn After Reading, which is very. He's writing a memoir. Just shout it out if you can think of
yeah.
it randomly, and we'll just assume we know what you're talking about.
Sure.
Next question. Favorite film about a major event at sea? Philip writes Pacific Rim. Justin writes The Abyss. And does Jaws count? Yes, Jaws counts. Where are sharks? In the water. Where's the cage? In the water with our shark.
don't ever compare me to the mayor in Jaws.
Don't compare me to the Jaws bit.
Andy Garcia,
right?
My favorite Andy Garcia performance in the 2000s, and then in the 21st century.
The Ghostbusters mayor.
Ghostbusters. Yeah, I love how he's just like, he's laughing, but he's being serious, and he throws his napkin down. He's like, don't ever compare me to the man.
That might be the one reason I'd rewatch Ghostbusters
for that one line.
Well, that whole entire scene is pretty great. It's like the rumbling, and then it's just the trash man.
For his outrage of being compared to the mayor in Jaws.
All right.
I really hope that movie like is just plays better the second time, like, cause I liked it. Like,
I saw it twice.
I'd be happy to see it again, I guess. But it's like, you know, that movie had such like a hard time this year for whatever reasons. No. It's like I hope it just gets watched and people are like, that movie's pretty funny, cause it was pretty funny.
I mean, I hope that it does get watched too, and people realize that like what we said on the podcast, it's not the casting that's the problem.
No, not at all. It's there's other problems with it, but certainly not the casting. But yeah, if I just you know fast forward through that Bill Murray scene, it's probably a pretty great movie.
Just take that out.
Just take that out completely.
That was pretty long now. I think
I hope the extended cut deletes that part and extends other things. Like
it extends, yeah, it's going to give you
it
more.
It extends by taking it out.
No, like Anna and I had a great time watching that movie. It was fun. Like,
I mean, what you're missing out on is the extended Dan Aykroyd scene.
Yeah, I like the Dan. Like that
super
I
long.
Like that scene more that
scene,
than I did.
That scene was fun.
I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah.
It was quick. It wasn't Bill Murray enters the room and stops the entire movie.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't that.
Also very quick Harold Ramis shout out. So
yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
that was great too.
Alright, so that was Ghostbusters. When did people go see that? okay, here, let's get to our questions.
Now we move to questions for everybody here on the panel, Michael and Aaron. These are questions for us to answer. Question is there do you know who wrote this, by the way?
I should probably write that down. Let me see here.
Give you some credit here, guy or gal.
Sorry, I forgot to. Why did I not copy that part? This question is from. Oh, there's three questions. Now. Oh no, there isn't. This question is from Philip.
Oh, Philip. Philip asks everybody here on the panel today: is there an actual event, contemporary or historic, that you'd like to see get a good film made to tell its story?
Well, if I guess I wanted a do-over, I'd say the Red Tails again.
That would be a good one.
Let me think. What was that? Oh, I've been wanting to see a movie about the Maccabees for some time now, as far as the story of Hanukkah and the gritty war story.
By the way, happy Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, thank you. Lashana Tova. Thank you for that.
Yeah. I'm above my stuff.
Let's see. Let me see. Historic events.
Is there an
event? The bombing of Dresden, I think, would be a very interesting war movie if that ever got made.
That would be kind of interesting. I would actually. I mean, I'm trying to think of something that I've been kind of. I mean, I generally tend to not think of, you know, contemporary real life events or historical. I mean, some historical ones, but not really contemporary ones, and think, oh, that'd be a really good movie. And the reason why is probably because some of them are a little bit more too sad in tone. But I mean, I don't know.
There's a. I haven't watched the second season of Marco Polo yet, but I do want to get around to that. But there was a movie called Mongol, and I bring this up for the same reason because they both deal with Genghis Khan. Mm-hmm. But there's a movie called Mongol from a little while ago now, which is really good, but there's much more story to be told. And I believe they did want to make like more entries in that of like in that series or whatnot, but they never got around to doing it. So I would like to see more Genghis Khan related films because there's a lot of interesting stuff to tell involving him.
I don't have a good answer for you, Philip, but I'll shout it out. Just
Right after Mike shouts out that favorite John Malkovich.
Yeah, exactly.
You
yeah.
Shout out.
We'll figure that out.
Next question. What franchise would you most like to see? This is from Joe. What franchise would you most like to see a Lego movie of?
Franchise?
Franchise. Now,
Back to the Future.
Okay. I think you can do that in Lego Dimensions.
Can you?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are two characters, Doc Brown and Marty.
I suppose there's not a Lego. Well, probably because there's just, if they're making Back to the Future 4, you can guarantee there'd be a Lego game about it already, but they're not.
I feel like there is already a Back to the Future one then. Yeah, you're probably right.
I didn't. When I saw this question, for whatever reason.
A Lego movie of, though.
Yeah, I know.
But it's in Lego Dimensions?
Yeah, that's a game. I know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
When I saw this question, even though it says franchise, I immediately thought I'd love to see I'd love to see Stanley Kubrick films as Lego movies, just to see what like
2001: Space Odyssey is just like
as Lego movies.
That'd be great.
Now, for whatever reason, that immediately popped into mind.
That wouldn't be bad.
So yeah, got that going.
Yeah, can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. All right, that was feedback.
Feedback.
Let's move on now. Let's get to What are we? Abe? What?
Ooh, Aaron, I believe it might be time for Michael and I to go head-to-head in games.
Ooh.
That's actually the music that was playing when Austin Butterfield gets punched out by Samuel L. Jackson.
Exactly. That is, of course, the improv theme for games.
The right tone for it, yeah.
Yes. Set it all up right there. Okay, guys. Some may call this lazy, because I've been doing the same game over and over again, but I like this game. It's
Taglines?
This game is Tim's Taglines.
Tim's
Tag... Yeah, that's right, more power. Okay, so I'm going to read movie taglines, and you're going to have to guess which movie they are. And of course, when we have directors that have lots of films, it's easy to make a theme about this, because it's all Tim Burton movie taglines.
Okay.
So every tagline I'm going to read to you is from a Tim Burton film, and you have to guess which one it is to buzz in. Just say your name out loud. And, you know, then say the answer, and okay. We'll go from there. You guys ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
Sure.
Okay, here's the next one. Here's the first one. His story will touch you, even though he can't.
These are Tim Burton-directed movies?
Yes.
Directed movies, okay.
Yeah, it's not Cabin Boy.
Yeah. His story will touch you, even if he can't?
His story will touch you, even though he can't.
Edward Scissorhands.
That is correct. Yes, make sure to say your name. But yes, Edward Scissorhands.
Good one, Michael.
I thought that'd be one of the easier ones, but you guys took your time. Okay.
I was going with Frankenweenie.
Okay. Here we go. Never forget, never forgive.
Never forget.
Never forgive.
Forgive. Oh, Abe.
Yeah?
Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
I prod the full title, and yes, that's correct.
Boom. Thank you. What helps is
I because there tends to be multiple taglines. I try to choose the blandest one possible to make it more difficult. Okay. Here's the next one. Boobies were his passion. Women were his weakness. Angora sweaters were his stuff.
Abe.
I said it wrong. Yeah. What?
Edward.
It was boobies were his passion. Women were his inspiration. Angora sweaters were his weakness.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's the next one. There's been a grave misunderstanding.
Abe.
Yeah.
Corpse Bride.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Here's the next one. Might be quick. Rule the Planet.
Michael.
Mike.
Planet of the Apes?
That is correct.
That's not true at all.
Okay. Here's the next one. Yikes! They've landed.
Michael.
Mike.
Mars Attacks.
Mars Attacks. Is
Dang it.
Answer.
I think we're tied right now.
Here's the next one. The Name and Laughter from the Hereafter.
The Name and Laughter from the Hereafter? Abe?
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland?
No.
Michael?
Yes.
Dark Shadows?
Incorrect. The answer is Beetlejuice.
Ugh.
What?
All right, my bad. Sorry. You said it three times.
Strange is relative.
Abe.
Yeah.
Dark Shadows?
Dark Shadows is correct.
That was...
Here's the next one. An Adventure as Big as Life Itself.
Oh.
Michael.
Mike.
Big Fish.
Big Fish is correct. Okay. It's a tight game, guys.
Are we tied right now?
I probably. I don't know.
Okay.
I just like saying that. It's a tight game.
Oh, yeah. Like 1990s tight, right? Oh, that's tight.
It's tight, yo.
Tight?
Yeah, brah.
Damn, that's tight.
Brah, B-A-R.
She created it, he sold it, and they bought it.
Abe.
Oh.
Big Eyes.
Big Eyes is correct. Here's the next one. Heads will roll.
Abe.
Yep.
Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow is correct. Fun fact, that was what Brandon Maxwell and I would say at the end of every episode of the Ichapod Crane Cast, the podcast that covered the Talk TV series Sleepy Hollow.
Is that podcast RIP?
That podcast is RIP, yes.
Okay.
Here's the next one.
The Horseman actually got you guys then. All right.
The Story of a Rebel and His Bike.
Story of a Rebel and His Bike? Abe.
Oh,
Abe.
Damn.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Pee-wee's Big Adventure is
Boom! That's a great movie. I love that movie.
Here's the last tagline. Only one will claim the night.
Michael.
Mike.
Batman?
Batman is correct.
All right.
Gotta add these up
Only
now.
Only one will claim the night?
Yeah, that was, again, the blandest tagline possible.
No worries, because I was like, wait, I feel like that's
that
more
sounds like a Batman
thing. But, no, you're right.
Oh, really? That's, oh.
Well, because I was like, well, there's more villains, like, one of them will claim the night, Batman Returns. I'm glad I didn't answer, because I would have got it wrong.
Yeah, Returns is just the Bat, the Cat, and the Penguin. So it's I'm not going to choose that as a one for this. All right, Abe.
A little more obvious.
Abe, you managed to slip ahead of Michael by just 1 point, so you are the winner of this week's game.
Oh.
Here's a handshake for you, Michael.
Here's a bonus question, though.
Bonus question? All right.
Yeah. What are the top three highest domestic grossing Tim Burton films?
Top three highest?
Yeah. One should be obvious.
Batman Returns.
Alice is first. Alice is first, yes.
Yeah. So Alice, Batman Returns, and we're doing this
I didn't say Batman Returns.
Oh, we're not doing this collaboratively? Okay.
Yeah, Alice made a billion, so yeah, it stands to reason that's the highest grossing one.
That sounds more.
It's also, unsurprisingly, the worldwide highest grossing Tim Burton film.
Yeah. And
two more.
Let's just say...
I'll give you a hint. Both the domestic and the worldwide are both the same. It's just different orders. For top three.
What is it? We just went through an entire game with Tim Burton movies, and I was like, I can't even think of... one that would be in the top three.
Well,
Batman?
Hollow is somewhere in there.
89 it's, Batman.
Yes, 89 Batman should be obvious because it was a huge hit and changed the way of blockbusters. But the third one is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, that makes more
Should've
sense.
Should have known.
Sleepy Hollow was a hit. It was, but you know, not to the lengths of... And it returns famous... I mean, it was a hit also, but it famously had a giant downturn in the weeks after its debut because of its violent content.
Mm.
All right, moving on. Let's get to Out Now. That was games. Let's move on to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are coming out on Blu-ray or DVD this week, and we have a number of things here. First up, X-Men Apocalypse.
No, don't see it.
It's pass.
Pass.
The Purge, election year.
Didn't see it, but Aaron, you said it was I?
As a person that did not like the first Purge... thought the second one was okay. I found this one to be the best one yet.
Really? Okay. No.
It's not the most amazing of recommendations. I still
exactly.
Issues, but it was the first one where like I didn't concern myself with the rules of the Purge too much to let it bother me.
The rules of the Purge, which is just don't be outside on Purge night.
Well, it goes deeper because it's like, well, so like if your neighbor tries to kill you and he doesn't succeed, do you just sit there for a year thinking, hey, remember when you tried to kill me? Oh, that's fun, right? Like, I mean, I don't understand the logic of a place like this. Let's see. Swiss Army Man.
I haven't seen it in full yet.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
I started the trailer? The first 10 minutes of it and then I was like, oh, I got to go to sleep.
Okay. Well, I did see it.
Is it worth watching?
I recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the performances are quite strong, and it's certainly a very visual film, is what it's doing. So.
Okay.
Let's see. Preacher, season one. I was a fan of Preacher.
I've heard that it was...
I liked Preacher. I wrote
it. I heard a mix of things about it. So.
Okay.
It's got some issues, but it's also one of the more unique things you'll see on television if you haven't read the comic series. Hmm. Penny Dreadful, the final season.
Heard that is a good show.
Yep. Haven't watched any of it.
Haven't watched any of it either.
Let's see. American Horror Story Hotel, which I hear was a terrible
season. Is that the last season?
That was this most recent season, yes.
Okay.
I heard it was better than the previous two.
I've heard bad things about it. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But the season that's currently on, I'm really liking, actually.
Roanoke?
Yeah, Roanoke.
Roanoke Island.
And I'm not...
That sounds like a Lord of the Rings type thing.
I tend to tune out after the first couple episodes of American Horror Story. This one's like, oh, my attention's being held the whole time so far, so that's great.
What have been the themes of the other ones?
The first one was a haunted house. It was just haunted called house. American Horror Story. The second one was a asylum.
Yeah, sane asylum.
Sane asylum. Okay. The third season was that the freak show one?
There was more. The circus one?
There was circus and then there was a witch.
Oh, no, it was the coven. It was a witch.
Yeah.
The third one.
Oh, weird.
Uh-huh. The fourth season, and that one was more comedic than anything, that witch one.
The witches one?
Yeah.
That sounds like the most frightening.
The fourth season was a freak show, which was just a bunch of circus freaks, and then this most recent one was in a hotel.
But not to get too much into an American Horror Story tangent, but are these kind of Tales from the Crypt style, where they're sarcastically horrific?
Yes, there's okay. Not to the same extent as something like, I don't know, Scream Queens, which is also from Ryan.
I've never seen anything.
But yeah,
there's seen Scream Queens.
There's a big dosage of humor that comes with the stuff. It's mainly just riffing off of a lot of other horror movies, which is what rubs me the wrong way to begin with.
Oh, bummer.
But it has its moments. Vikings season 4.
Haven't seen it. Heard it's good.
Venture Brothers season 6, which is awesome.
Okay, believe you.
Constantine, season 1.
Wasn't that show canceled?
Yes, it was.
I think it's the only season.
Banshee, the complete fourth season.
What is that show even about?
I have no idea what it's actually about. I just know it's been on Cinemax. And it's
good job for getting four seasons.
I guess people watch it.
Yeah.
Sharknado, the Fourth Awakens.
Yeah, I mean, yes, Ian Zierling loves that work.
Ian
Zierling.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Ion.
He pronounces it Ion. What can I say?
Yeah.
The Prince Movie Collection, Purple Rain, Under the Cherry Moon, and Graffiti Bridge all great this week. To remind people that Prince had more than one movie.
Yeah.
Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, new special collector's edition.
That's the one not with Adam Sandler.
No, the original, good movie. Yeah. Yes. Is it Gary Cooper?
Is it Gary Cooper? All right.
I think so. I'm saying that wrong.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, it's Gary Cooper. Yeah. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know.
I run a movie podcast around here. I get outraged about things sometimes. I teach Baffer.
There goes that old Aaron.
I want some silver gold. Okay, moving on. That was Now Presents What's That Now. Let's move on to extremely cool. These are things that are now on Netflix that we could recommend. And obviously, Abe, you tipped it earlier. Luke Cage is now on Netflix.
Luke Cage
is quite good.
It's pretty good.
I've watched
a lot of themes.
I've only seen a couple episodes so far, but I am very much drawn to what.
Until you get to the one with Method Man.
Can't wait.
Can't wait for that.
Also out, documentary Amanda Knox is now on Netflix.
I heard that one's great. Wait, is that on HBO or is that on?
No, Netflix.
Okay,
no, Netflix.
It's extremely cool.
Gotcha.
If you're a fan of things like Serial, or Memories of a Murder.
By Serial, he's spelling it Serial.
Yeah,
not Captain Crunch cereal.
Yeah. Yeah, not that cereal.
Other kind of true crime type documentaries. This one is the latest, and I'm hearing great things about it. It's in my queue.
You know what true crime reminds me of?
That Clint Eastwood movie?
No, it reminds me of the magazine that gets picked up in Stand By Me when they're gonna go get their cherry bombs in the gun.
Okay.
Yeah.
In any case, also if you have Amazon Prime streaming, Sicario is now out on.
Sicario is. Yeah, I saw that was on there. And I got an email about this because I like when
you got Netflix, an email from
Netflix sends me. It's like this is just on Netflix, and we think you might like it. It says it says Barton Fink, and I'm like, yes, I like Barton Fink.
Barton Fink.
I have it, but thanks for recommending it to me anyway. But Barton Fink is now streaming on Netflix, so there you go.
There you go.
If you're in advanced Coen Brothers studies, that's one to watch.
By the way, I just rewatched Llewyn Davis, which I didn't bring up in what is our own segment?
Quickies.
Quickies TM. And maybe it is a time travel movie. I'm not sure.
It's a great movie. I know that.
Good music.
For sure. All right. Oh, yeah. That was extremely cool. Let's move on to next week. Next week's show. The Birth of a Nation arrives in theaters next week. The very uncontroversial.
Ooh. With a lot of controversy.
And so that should be the film that we talk about. I know The Girl on a Train also comes out, and I'm sure it'll be mentioned. But I've already recruited Marcus Robinson, telling him, you know, I'm going to ask you about Birth of a Nation to get on the podcast.
I'm excited,
and he's going to be on the show. I'm going to try and get some other guests as well.
Marcus and who else?
I'm working on that still.
Okay, gotcha.
I know Marcus Robinson will be back. Fun to have him on, as always.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going to be the episode for next week. And for now, last thing we do here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Abe, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Fubo and the Two Strings. Go see it. I know it's slowly making its way out of theaters, but if you can, that'd be fantastic. It'd be greatly appreciated by the staff there, I'm pretty sure. Next, probably going to be Birth of a Nation. If not that, then Hell or High Water, which I'm still trying to hoping to catch. Okay. No, I'm hoping to catch it before it leaves theaters.
Michael, how about you?
Excuse me. I just saw Don't Breathe, too, so I would say catch that and Queen of Quatley. And as for what I'm going to see next week, I'm probably going to see Girl on the Train and Birth of a Nation.
I would say Queen of Quatley as well. That was on my list here of things people should go see. And yeah, Birth of a Nation is the movie I'll be seeing next. So with that out of the way, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Out Now with Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work at my personal blog, thecodeyzeek.com. You can find all my written movie reviews there. You can also find me over at wiseofblue.com, and I'm writing daily over at Screen Rant, and I'm on Twitter at Aaron's PS4. Abe?
I'm not writing daily at Screen Rant, but you can find more of Aaron's work over at Screen Rant or thecodeyzeek.com. And you can listen to, or you can read all of my old stuff over at walrusmoose.blogspot.com, and or follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/walrusmoose, # Deepwater Horizon, with three question marks.
Michael Lee, where can people find more of your work?
You can find more of my work on geeksofdoom.com or That's It LA.
Great.
That's It LA? Cool.
That's It LA.com.
Okay.
And you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audio Boom.
You can listen to our old episodes over HHWLOD, SoundCloud, and or Podomatic. We're going to be updating that SoundCloud page pretty soon.
You can feel free to email us any of your thoughts that you may have on Tim Burton's latest or anything else we talked about this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Or you can write it on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet at us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
There's also our very popular Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com. It's super popular. Don't ask anyone how popular it is. They'll just blush.
They're lying to you, yeah.
Michael, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. And that is it until I was going to make a joke about Birth of a Nation, but I don't feel like I want to do that anymore. So I'm just going to stop there while I'm ahead and say that's going to do it for this week. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down, when you're strange. Faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange, when you're strange. People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're alone. Women seem wicked when you're unwanted. Streets are uneven when you're down.
Start. It's going. Okay, here we go.
Mine's going.
Okay, good.
I believe. Yep. Yeah.
I believe in a thing called love.
I believe. I believe. I believe.
Okay. All right.
Is that what the song you were singing?
No, I was thinking, I believe in a thing called love.
Oh.
Just listen to the rhythm of my heart. Okay, okay. Instead of the darkness. I believe in a thing called love. All right.
We could form a boy band.
I fucking crushed the darkness song. We put that on Rock Band. I'll nail it. All right.